Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 54, The Marriage of Krishna and Rukmini, Text 45. Deha,
Deha,
Adi,
Adi,
Antava,
Antava,
Esha,
Esha,
Dravya,
Dravya,
Vana,
Vana,
Vanatmaka,
Vanatmaka,
Atmani,
Atmani,
Avidyaya,
Avidyaya,
Klipta,
Klipta,
Samsarayati,
Samsarayati,
Dehinam,
Dehinam,
Dehadyantavan
Esha, Dehadyantavan Esha,
Ravya Prana Gunatmaka,
Ravya Prana Gunatmaka,
Atmanya Vidyaya Klipta,
Atmanya Vidyaya Klipta,
Samsarayati Dehina,
Samsarayati Dehina,
Deha Adyantavan
Esha,
Ravya Prana Gunatmaka,
Ravya Prana Gunatmaka,
Atmanya Vidyaya Klipta,
Atmanya Vidyaya Klipta,
Samsarayati Dehinam,
Samsarayati Dehinam,
Deha Adyantavan
Esha, Deha Adyantavan Esha,
Ravya Prana Gunatmaka,
Ravya Prana Gunatmaka,
Atmanya Vidyaya Klipta,
Atmanya Vidyaya Klipta,
Samsarayati Dehina,
Samsarayati Dehina,
Deha,
Deha,
the material body,
material body,
Adi,
Adi,
beginning,
beginning,
Anta,
Anta,
and end,
and end,
Vaan, having,
having,
Esha,
Esha,
this,
this,
Dravya,
Dravya,
of the physical elements,
of the physical elements,
Prana,
Prana,
the senses,
the senses,
Guna,
Guna,
and the primary modes of material nature,
and the primary modes of material nature,
goodness, passion, and ignorance,
goodness, passion, and ignorance,
Atmaka,
Atmaka,
composed,
composed,
Atmani,
Atmani,
on the self,
on the self,
Avidyaya,
Avidyaya,
by material ignorance,
by material ignorance,
Klipta,
Klipta,
imposed,
imposed,
Samsarayati,
Samsarayati,
causes to experience,
causes to experience,
the cycle of birth and death,
the cycle of birth and death,
Dehina,
Dehina,
an embodied being,
an embodied being.
Translation. This material body, which has a beginning and an end, is composed of the physical elements, the senses, and the modes of nature. The body, imposed on the self by material ignorance, causes one to experience the cycle of birth and death. Purport. The material body, composed of various material qualities, elements, and so on, attracts and repels the conditioned soul, and thus entangles him in material existence. Because of our attraction and repulsion for our own body and other bodies, we establish temporary relationships, dedicate ourselves to great endeavors and sacrifices, concoct imaginary religions, make noble speeches, and thoroughly involve ourselves in material illusion. As Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage. Beyond the somewhat absurd theater of material existence is the real and meaningful world of Krishna consciousness. The liberated life of pure souls devoted in loving service to the Supreme Lord. Deha adyantavane shadravya prana gunatmaka atmanya vidyaya klipta samsarayati dehinam. This material body, which has a beginning and an end, is composed of the physical elements, the senses and the modes of nature. The body, imposed on the self by material ignorance, causes one to experience the cycle of birth and death. Haritanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The Lord Balaram is described in a number of places as the crest jewel of the intelligent. He's very, very expert in analyzing situations, people, and seeing very quickly what is the best thing to do, most appropriate thing to do, and the right thing to do, which will really benefit those concerned. This is Lord Balaram. He's very special in that way. Of course, Krishna and Balaram, and all the different forms of the Lord, they're not different individual persons, but they are one person, one in many. So Balaram and Krishna, they're the same person. They're not two different people as we are different, quite different individuals. They're one person. But still, in the development of the transcendental pastimes and all the different interactions and the exchanges of love and affection and so on in devotional service, then they manifest slightly different, somewhat different characters. So here we're seeing, this is a very classic case and a very wonderful example of Lord Balaram showing his special qualifications, which, in a certain transcendental sense of Achintya Veda Vaitattva, distinguish him from Lord Krishna in the sense of difference of Achintya Veda Vaitattva. It's very, very wonderful. Lord Balaram, he is the older brother in terms of the pastimes. He's not the older brother. Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in terms of the pastimes, Balaram is the older brother. He is a little older, he is a little more mature, he is a little more experienced, and in those ways, when they are interacting in the pastimes, sometimes he exhibits some special qualifications and special activities in this type of sense of being older and wiser like this. This is a very classic case. Rukmini is in the process, or has been kidnapped by Lord Krishna, and her brother Rukmini has pursued them. You've been following the story. And dramatic scene. Then Rukmini and Krishna confront each other on the road, but Lord Krishna, due to his superiority, absolute superiority, is able to totally defeat Rukmini and not kill him, but make a great, great fool of him by cutting his hair in strange ways and sort of superficially disfigure him in really quite embarrassing ways. And for a Kshatriya, as we read in Bhagavad Gita, at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, for the Kshatriyas, dishonor is worse than death. If somehow that happens, that they are embarrassed in some very public way, and it's very much a very vivid and dramatic situation of embarrassment and being made to look an utter fool, then the Kshatriya, real Kshatriya, would rather die than have to go through that. The pain of death, which to so many other people is unimaginable, they cannot think about it, they will not think about it. As a result, when it comes, they are totally overwhelmed by it, 100%. But that pain of death for the Kshatriya is nothing. Nothing. Even Lord Krishna makes the point to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that happy are the Kshatriyas for whom death comes on the battlefield. They are happy. So, but if they are made fun of and belittled publicly, then this is too much painful for them. So Rukmini was like that. And Krishna did like that. He just made him look like the most extremely terrible fool. Kidnapped his wife right in the middle of the marriage ceremony. Then he went to try and get his wife back. He couldn't, because he was not qualified, he was not powerful enough as a Kshatriya. How embarrassing to have to come back under those circumstances alone. And then on top of it, to be disfigured in this grotesque way, looking like an utter idiot. Oh, for a Kshatriya, it's far too much. Far too much. So, Rukmini, observing all of this, of course she's so attached to Lord Krishna. But at the same time, there is some type of attachment to her brother Rukmini, because after all they're brother and sister, so many years they have been together and known each other, so naturally there's some attachment there. So, a very interesting mixture in terms of her mood. Extreme attachment to Lord Krishna, but at the same time, some attachment to her brother. Anyway, actually this is transcendental. Srila Prabhupada explains elsewhere that the attachment of Rukmini for Rukmi, as displayed here, just as with the apparent attachment of Balaram for Duryodhana, when Duryodhana was Lord Balaram's student in club fighting. So we all know Duryodhana was first-class demon. Terrible, terrible demon. Through and through. From the very outset, even at the time of his birth, the Brahmins and astrologers and people who can immediately analyze in terms of the birth situation, they can analyze, who is this person? What are his qualities? What is his karma? And how will his life develop? They could see, oh, here we have terrible living disaster. Absolute disaster for himself. Absolute disaster for everybody he comes into contact with. So they said, just kill him. Just kill him now. Immediately. But Dhritarashtra couldn't anyway. But anyway, as the story unfolded, he became the student and the Pandavas of Lord Balaram when it came to club fighting. And somehow or other, he became, in that sense, not in a spiritual sense, but just as a student in a particular field, he became the most dedicated. He was the most dedicated in terms of learning the club fighting. And Lord Balaram appreciated this tremendously and exhibited what appeared to be a type of attachment for Duryodhana, and even apparently, at least sometimes, an apparent preference for Duryodhana over the Pandavas. So Srila Prabhupada discusses this, and Prabhupada says, this is these two situations, Rukmini's attachment for Rukmi and Balaram's attachment for Duryodhana, these are special arrangements of the Leela Shakti, an aspect of Yoga Maya. The Leela Shakti made these arrangements. Otherwise, how could Rukmini, who is the eternal consort of Lord Krishna, have her eternal and natural attachment for the Lord as his internal potency, how could that become interfered with by some attachment to a demon, an outright materialist who was staunchly hateful of Krishna? Is not possible. Or Lord Balaram, who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, how could he be more affectionate for also just terrible demon, most atrocious demon, over and above the Pandavas, who are some of the greatest devotees, eternal devotees of the Lord? So this is Leela Shakti. And here we see Lord Balaram is displaying that intelligence which is referred to in different places in Shastra, and which distinguishes him from Lord Krishna. Not that Lord Krishna is not totally intelligent, he is, but still Lord Balaram, in terms of his pastimes and dealings, sometimes in very prominent and powerful and meaningful ways, he displays great intelligence to resolve apparently unresolvable situations, and this is one of his hallmarks, particular features, which he does. quite regularly to sort out just some terrible problems which otherwise no one could sort out. So this is what he's doing here. He is preaching, I think, to Rukmini, yes, to Rukmini, giving different arguments and doing everything very intelligent, giving some very nice argument to her. Don't worry too much about your brother for this reason or that. And then in order to encourage her, turning to Krishna and chastising Krishna, you know, you shouldn't have done that. So Rukmini feels a little encouraged. Yes, he shouldn't have done that. But then back to Rukmini that, well, you know, don't let us not get too bewildered by the situation, which helps her a little step forward, further back on the path of recovery. But then back to Krishna, you know, for another reason he shouldn't have done this. It's very nice. And in the end, everyone is happy except, of course, Rukmini. But he would never be happy. So, yeah. So everything works out by the great intelligence of Lord Balaram. So here he's making the point. Very interesting point, and a very important point. Our BBT commentators quote William Shakespeare, a famous British sage of some sort, full of words of wisdom. But to quote he himself, Shakespeare himself, and I can't remember, I don't know if any of you were Shakespearean people, but what did he say? Something, something, something. A tale told by a fool, full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. This sort of summarizes Shakespeare. He is widely regarded as the most astute, you know, user of the English language of all time, and composed all these very fascinating, materially fascinating dramas, which to this day are just completely taken so seriously, really, as basically the pinnacle of English language drama. Oh, yeah. And even today, like, I don't know, I forget when he lived, but a few hundred years ago, but they still had Shakespearean, there are numerous, like companies, and all they do is Shakespeare. The Royal Shakespearean in England. Anyway, but what is it? Looks very nice to them. Sounds very clever. Expresses himself in such colorful ways. But as he himself says, all these things, what are they? A tale told by a fool, full of sound and fury, but signifying nothing. Any of you remember where that's from? I can't remember. That's from one of his, it's one of his very famous statements, along with this other one. All the world's a stage. And then something like, everyone's an actor, he says. And it may be, is it part of the sequence leading up to that?
I'm not sure. The world is a stage and we are merely players.
It's something like that, yeah. So, of course, this verse here, Lord Balaram is saying like this, that the material body is such a thing, composed of various material ingredients, and it is imposed on the self through ignorance. We're in ignorance. We don't know who we are. So many things we don't know. In fact, practically everything we don't really know. And the worst thing is we don't even know who we are. And therefore the likelihood of us doing the right things in terms of what are our needs and what is our nature and what we should do, what we must do, then there's no chance. How will we do that? We're in ignorance. And this body is imposed on us through our ignorance because we're so stupid. Then we start thinking, oh, I am this, I am that. Or I would like to be this, I would like to be that. And then we get a body like that. And we just go on. Samsara yati, as Lord Balaram says, experiencing the cycle of birth and death. So all of us, we should understand, although maybe a little hard to imagine why, but we should understand that we have got our specific bodies because in ignorance we wanted them. And now after many years we've all been living in our particular bodies, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years or more even in some cases. And after so many years of experience of the body, then we may wonder, why did I want this body? Why this one? And what was the point? But in our ignorance, previously we thought there was a point. I will have a male, European male one. Of this type, you know, big or small or strong or more delicate or whatever, that particular type of body, this is what I want. Either directly or indirectly, we were feeling like that. Therefore, we got it. And here we are in it. But unfortunately, it was not that wonderful thing that we thought it was going to be. And in fact, so many frustrations and problems have already come to us. And the more years we go on having to contend with the body, the more frustrations it gives us. And finally it all culminates in death. But generally what happens, in not just generally, but what happens to the conditioned souls is that in the course of going through the whole experience, life in this body, then we eventually, we start thinking in different ways that actually I'd rather not have this type of body again. I would rather have a different type. So then we start daydreaming, concocting, thinking in different ways of what sort of body would I like to have next time? And then we get that type of body next time. So now we have a male body. Perhaps previously we had a female body because we wanted it. But then after so many years in a female body, we thought, oh no, not this. Let me have a male body. Now we got the male body. Anyway, one way or another, we desired the bodies we have. And we got them. And now we're finding that they're not so nice. And we, in our illusion, in our ignorance, we are thinking, a different type of body would have been better. Let me get that type of body. Then it'll be nice. But that's how we got this body. So it goes on. 8,400,000 species of life. And as Shakespeare said, all the world's a stage. We're just acting different parts. In one drama, we are the king. In the next drama, we are the businessman. In the next drama, we are the pauper in the street. Just depends on the drama and the part we get. But each time it is simply our ignorance. And we see this. Hopefully we do not watch too many or even any movies and all this sort of stuff. But I'm sure we've all seen our share in the past. And you know, many years ago, I forget exactly, but 15 to 20 years ago, I was flying to Mauritius or from Mauritius to India, and they were showing some movies on the plane, Indian movies, Bollywood Hindi movies. And I noticed, well, one of the movies was Radha and Krishna Take Birth Again Today. And so Radha is this sort of groovy girl and, you know, in a skirt and, you know, all these types of things. Krishna is the groovy boy. In those days, to be groovy in India, you had to have a motor scooter. So Krishna had his groovy motor scooter. He was buzzing around. And in this way, Radha and Krishna came together today. But anyway, what I noticed particularly was that there was, you know, two or three or however many dramas showing. I mean, films showing. And in, I think, two of them, the same actor was the main actor. And in one, he was, you know, somebody. In another, he was someone completely different. In one, he was something like, he was Krishna, actually. In the other one, he was some sort of gangster. So, you know, anyone who would bother watching that would have seen the same person. But because he is a somewhat accomplished actor, he can present himself in one way in one film, but then immediately present himself in a very different way in the next one. But the audience, if they're foolish enough, they just become absorbed. Oh, here is Krishna riding on his motor scooter through Bombay. And here is the gangster, you know. Usually, well, I don't know about usually, but sometimes those gangsters, they're actually good guys, but they've had to become gangsters for some reason. So they're not like real bad gangsters. This is the romantic conceptions of Bollywood. But it's just same person. He is a person, he has his life, but now he is acting like he's some silly boy from Bombay. And now he's acting like he's some vicious killer criminal. But he's one person, he's not either. But people, they identify. They're watching the film. And what is the point of watching the film if you don't become absorbed in it and identify with it and experience the emotions of it? What would be the point? Unless you just want to evaluate the people's acting skills, you know, in a sort of technical sense. But what is the point? But we see that the film and entertainment, you know, television industry and so on, is so incredibly successful. Huge. Why is it? Because people want to go into these dream worlds and identify and experience and go through it all and come out feeling something. So it is an extension of the fundamental factors of material life in general, actually. That's what it is. That what sort of illusion will we go through today, meaning what sort of film will we see today? What sort of illusion will we embrace today for our enjoyment? Or what sort of illusion will we embrace for this lifetime? This is material existence. So devotee of course is a person who has seen through this and is not captivated by these things. It is a challenge. It is one of the great challenges for the devotees. How to not get caught up in different types of false identities in the sense of maintaining little hopes and ideas of what I could have done in material existence. What I could have done, I could have been a successful business person. So sometimes we daydream about it. I could have been a successful something, something. In our mind, we may fantasize. But to whatever degree we do that, as devotees, we should understand we're really flirting with Maya in a very dangerous way. Because if we really become attached to those ideas and regularly start meditating on them, then perhaps in our next life, perhaps we'll have to take another lifetime. And if we have to take another birth by the will of the Lord somehow, but maybe it will be in that type of situation. And in other words, maybe it will be a real step back from the fortunate situations that we're all in now, being able to engage in devotional service. So therefore, as devotees, it's very important to control our minds and not allow our minds to wander off into little fantasy worlds of whatever. Little daydreams about enjoying with the opposite sex or having lots of money or being this or that or something. And running the risk of actually becoming attached. And in this way, possibly having to take birth in that sort of situation. And who knows if we take birth again in a situation which is really materialistic, who knows whether we'll somehow become devotees again? Who knows? Even like in the case of Srila Prabhupada's son, children, not all of them became devotees. Even Advaita Acharya, he had, I think, 6 sons. 3 of them were great devotees. 3 of them became non-devotees, Mayavadis. So even Krishna, when he appeared as Lord Varaha, he had a son, he and Bhumi, they had a son. He became Narakasura through bad association. So let us understand that actually this practice of entertaining little ideas of reviewing what I used to do in a mood of being attracted to it, or fantasizing about what I could have done or something like that if I was not engaged in devotional service, we should understand these are real, very dangerous, actually. We become attached to it, like Maharaj Bharat, somehow, mysteriously, he became attached, unexpectedly, to a deer. And then he had to take birth again. So let us not become actors, even on some mental stage, what to speak of going and trying to act it out in practical activity, but let us stay absorbed in devotional service. Any comments or questions?
Thank you for a very lively class, Maharaj. I have a question. Can you please speak more about how we understand Lila Shakti and how it relates to Yoga Maya? What is this Lila Shakti?
The pastime potency of the Lord. It's one aspect of Yoga Maya, but it's the main aspect. Yoga Maya is there to facilitate the pastimes, the enjoyment of the Lord. Yeah. So, you know, in a sense, yoga, in a certain sense, Yoga Maya could be taken to be just a synonym for, or Lila Shakti could be taken to be just a synonym for Yoga Maya. But actually, Yoga Maya also has further functions, like in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, the conditioned souls are bewildered by Yoga Maya. So this term Yoga Maya, it can apply. It means the internal potency in the broadest sense, which includes the illusory potency of this Mahamaya. But ultimately, that function of the internal potency, which is there to just enhance, or not just enhance, but to do everything in the pastimes, all the arrangements and all the different experiences and emotions and happenings in the pastimes, this is the Lila Shakti aspect of Yoga Maya. You know, Yoga Maya, there's a Chit Shakti aspect to it, of consciousness. So it's like this, Lila Shakti. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Dr. Bangani.
My question is, but I was reading something. So, it was said that one gives the whole according to his desire. So, could you please repeat that?
Yeah. But it doesn't mean that you die as you desire. But it means you leave your body, and in terms of your desires, you go on to your next situation. Yeah. You know, in a certain sense, you leave your body as you desire, because you will die, a person will die in such a way as dictated by their karma. But their karma is just produced from their activities, and their activities are produced by their desires. So, you know, therefore in a certain sense you could say that you die as you desire to die, so to speak. But really it is that we die and we go on to it. You know, the whole phenomenon of death, leaving the body, going into another body, it goes on. We end up in the body we desired.
Especially the last part that you mentioned. I wanted to comment and ask some question. Especially I wanted to find out about the effect in the subtle body of say even lamentations that you may have about previous things that you could have done in this way or that way, or how does it affect our subtle body to give us another birth in the situation?
Well, if you, for example, if you in your fantasies fantasize that you are a hero, you know, a big, heroic, valiant knight in shining armor or something, your subtle body will become like that. It'll take the form of some, you know, Kshatriya type form. And then when you leave the gross body, you get a new gross body which conforms with the subtle body which has developed. So you will tend to get that heroic, you know, powerful type body. But if a person is prone to moroseness and tamagun and depression and, you know, just getting really distressed easily and, you know, people, when they get to a certain point in that way, they become attracted to misery. And they may even want to be in misery. So they get, the subtle body transforms into some tamasic sort of shape where, you know, when you get born in that body, well, then you get born in that body like, you know, I don't know, the Phantom of the Opera or someone, or the Hunchback of Notre Dame, you know. You get like a really tumusic and just messed up, disturbed body, because your subtle body became sort of contorted and twisted and, you know, unhealthy due to becoming immersed in tamagun. Then, because your subtle body has become that sort of, you know, mixed up, messed up shape, then you'll get a gross body that conforms with that. Yeah. Like if a person develops a doggish consciousness, always barking and chastising and criticizing and, you know, for no reason, then the subtle body becomes like that, shaped like that. And then you get a dog's body, then you can just, you know, just see, then it seems natural to you to just bark at anybody.
I also have a question once, to find out, maybe for me to explain, what is this enjoyment that maybe our mind is getting from movies, and what is it that is maybe in the real sense of Krishna consciousness that needs to be done to compensate for what the mind may search for in its movies?
Yeah, well, it's a mental enjoyment. It's not a physical enjoyment. Because mental and physical are very closely connected. Like you watch, someone watches some very sad film, and the mind becomes sad. And then tears come from the eyes. So the mental, whole mental thing becomes translated into a physical experience. But, yeah, it's more like a sense of hope. Or something like that. I could be like that. I could be the hero. She, you know, I could be loved by such a wonderful girl as her. You know, I mean, oh, that would be nice. So that sort of hope. Yeah, Jiva Goswami says in, I forget exactly which one of the Sandarbhas, and maybe Paramatma Sandarbha, that the pleasure that the human being experiences is mainly mental. In thinking about what he will do, and yes, becoming, you know, getting some excitement out of that, and remembering what he did do, but remembering what he did do without all the problems that happened, but just the good part of it, and even, you know, blowing that out of proportion anyway, on top of overlooking the negative parts. And as a result of that, Jiva Goswami says, in now, because they're so preoccupied with the future and the past, they cannot really absorb themselves in now and enjoy whatever there may be to enjoy so much. But most of their enjoyment is mental in terms of, you know, what I'm going to do and what I did. What I'm going to do, of course, an extremely optimistic view of what I'm going to do, what I want to do. And what I did, an extremely optimistic look back at what I did. And the whole experience of what is actually happening now is, you know, not so great. Yeah, it's not really so wonderful. But in this way, the emotions are stimulated, and even though it's really just mental, but because there's the connection between the mind, the gross, the subtle and gross bodies, there's some sort of, you know, feeling like an idea, like we're actually in getting some enjoyment out of it, even physically. Something like that.
Krishna states that there is no loss of emotion in this talk. So as devotees, is it possible for us to actually fall into a lifelong course?
Well, it's not very likely, but it's possible. And Krishna also says, you know, Krishna says different things about different sort of situations of this type. Like of somehow or other leaving Krishna consciousness in one way or another, either through dying before you're perfect, or possibly actually falling down. So one thing that Krishna says is Ashradadana Purusha Dharmasyasya Palantapa Aprapya Mam Nivartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmani, that those who are not faithful on this path of devotional service cannot attain me. They return to birth and death. So if someone is really not faithful, like they're really offensive and they really deviate from Krishna consciousness and really become against it and, you know, just really reject it heavily, then they can fall down. Mrityu Samsara Vartmani, Krishna says, they return to both birth and death. Yeah. You know, I mean, after all, our basic understanding is we were with Krishna, but we certainly fell down. So, you know, then the idea is that when you go back, or as you're going back to Krishna, it is much less likely that you will again fall down like we fell down the first time, because of having gone through what we went through. So it's much less likely. But still, if someone really becomes determined that they don't want Krishna consciousness and they really want material existence, they can return to the ocean of birth and death. It doesn't, you know, the idea is not that we can just do any rubbish and, you know, become really attached to rubbish and just think, well, you know, I'm sooner or later Krishna will bring me back, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. But still, if a person is basically sincere but they're weak, and as a result of being weak, then somehow they become deviated. But still, that sincerity at heart is sort of basically there in the background, in due course they'll come back to Krishna consciousness, either in this life or next life. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada ki.